You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
On the 25th of June, our regular City Counselling guest, Julie Ferry, was involved in a road collision while she was biking in her local area. Ferry wrote about the close call in a piece published in The Spin-off as a reinvigoration of her previous advocacy around the need for road safety measures that improve how safely and efficiently Aucklanders can get around the city. As well, this week we've seen the release of the State of the City report, which compares Auckland on metrics including opportunity and prosperity, culture and experience, place and connectivity, innovation and knowledge, and resilience and sustainability. The report found that we are falling behind other cities, with the biggest emphasis placed on our poor economic productivity in comparison with similar locations. I spoke with Julie Ferry about both of these topics, firstly by asking her what motivated her to write about her recent collision.
I think, basically, I want to help people to understand the impact that these kinds of accidents have. You know, this is not one that will actually make the statistics in terms of being what we call a DSI, a death or serious injury. Because I won't have permanent disability, it doesn't count as a serious injury, it's only a moderate injury. Nonetheless, you know, I can't walk. I won't be able to even start trying to walk for another 3 weeks, which will be the 6 week mark since the accident. And so I wanted to outline for people, hey, these are the consequences of what was effectively a boring mistake made by a driver during rush hour. That meant that they hit me with their car and I flew off my bike and had broken my leg. And so I wanted to sort of tell that story of, hey, yeah, these are the impacts for me personally, but then also that all flows out in terms of having system impacts too. You know, it disrupted traffic on the day. Yeah, obviously there's been a drain on the health service, which continues. Yeah, I had an in-person physio come and visit me yesterday. There's a whole bunch of ACC equipment I have to help me get around the house and things like that. So I wanted to sort of tell that broader story of hopefully people can read what's happened to me and go, oh, hang on a second, yeah, these are accidents do matter, and we do need to minimise them. We need to minimise the impacts when they happen, but we also need to hopefully stop them from happening in the first place. And to sort of close that gap, because I see a lot of people expressing sympathy and empathy about worse accidents as well as my own experience, but actually there are system changes we can make that will lessen the impact of these accidents, lessen the impact that they happen in the first place. And we need to close that gap there and go, okay, I care about this happening to the individual. Actually, here's some changes I can support that would make it less likely this would happen in the future. And that's really why I wrote the article, was to hopefully get people who perhaps haven't seen it up close to understand, hey, this is what it is like for people. Yeah, and I mean, I'm in a lot of pain this week. I haven't had a lot of pain up till now, which has been very fortunate. And so that in turn is limiting my capacity to do my job. And so I also wanted my constituents to understand I'm not as available as I might otherwise be at the moment, for pretty good reasons.
What are some of the specific changes you have advocated for or would advocate for in regard to ensuring that Aucklanders aren't deterred by safety risks from modes of transport like cycling?
I think the big one for me is lower speed. Now, this was a relatively low speed crash because the person was turning a corner. They had slowed down to take the corner and, you know, they were probably going a little bit faster than maybe I might have gone turning that corner. I don't know. I couldn't really entirely judge their speed. It happened quite quickly. But if they'd been going faster, I probably wouldn't be having this conversation with you. I'm acutely aware of that, that in a lot of ways I was very lucky. And also if I had been a smaller person, if the car had hit me directly as opposed to hitting the bicycle, which then threw me off, then, yeah, we'd be having either a we wouldn't be talking at all today, or we wouldn't be talking for a few more months, you know. So that's something I'm really aware of is the speed stuff, and that's something I have been advocating for really strongly. I guess the other thing is that would have had an impact on this particular accident is those safe routes to cycle lanes. One of the things so I was just up the road from my house. There's no cycle lanes directly around my house, but I live not too far from some bike lanes and infrastructure. Now, I don't use that to go to work in the city, which is what I was doing, because they don't go in the right direction for me to get to the city, but also I can't get from my house to those bike lanes. You know, it's safer for me, currently has been, to go on the normal road to get to the Dominion Road bus lanes, which are actually pretty good for me. I'm comfortable, lots of people aren't. Double-decker buses are scary. That for me has been a better option. But, you know, my mum doesn't want me to ride a bike ever again, but if I do, she wants me to only ride in cycle lanes. Well, I can't get to the cycle lanes from my house. So, you know, that effectively cuts out that option. If I were to do that, and I'm not saying we have to have a cycle lane from every house, you know, but having, you know, residential streets that are kinder to all modes of transport and not just about throughput for cars and people parking their cars, that would make a difference. And that's something, again, that I've been advocating for. And slower speeds is part of that too, right? You slow the speed down and it makes it a friendlier environment for people who are walking and cycling. The other thing, sorry, I know I'm going on a bit about this. The other thing is that the person who hit me with their car was dropping a child at school. Now, I don't know, we talked briefly on the day, I haven't talked to them since, I don't know their name or anything, so I don't know the choices that led them to feeling that driving their kid to school was the way to go, but if they had, you know, if their family was in a situation where that kid could get to school independently, they would simply not have been driving the car that way that morning. They would not have been, I suspect, in a little bit of a rush, because I know what time that school starts because my kids have gone to that school. You know, that it made a mistake. So that's another, you know, next level sort of thing, that if we can create safer environments that mean that families feel that they can let their school kids, and this is an intermediate age kid, get to school independently, then that in turn will make our streets safer and, you know, have a really a virtuous cycle effect as well.
While you're here, I also wanted to talk a bit about Auckland's latest State of the City report. I was wondering if you'd had a look at it and what you would say should be Auckland Council's priorities in terms of improving the city on an international stage.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting about this report is that one of the reasons that we're going backwards a little bit is actually because some of our peer cities are getting better. So, and we're not getting better at the same rate, or we are going backwards a little bit. And one of the things that I've taken out of it, and it's interesting because, you know, they release this every year, but actually they don't invite the councillors to attend. They invite the mayor, and he spoke, I understand. And obviously I couldn't have gone this year anyway. But, yeah, it's kind of weird to me that this is a conversation with everybody interested in the future of Auckland, and yet the councillors are not invited to participate in the release of it. But one of the key things that's coming through in it is that one of the issues that we're falling behind on in terms of the attracting talent and innovation and things like that is actually decarbonisation of our city, and that is having an impact internationally. We're seen as falling behind, and therefore that's affecting our rankings for this. And so that stuff that's around transport, so, you know, emissions, our biggest chance of tackling our emissions for Auckland is to reduce our transport emissions. So that's a transport question, but it's also a housing question, and they've identified that in the report too, that there's too much sprawl, which again increases emissions, and we're not being efficient enough about our land use, allowing more housing and more different types of housing close to jobs and education, close to good transport links, that kind of thing. So it's going to be really interesting to see next time they do the benchmarking, or in a few years' time, with some of the central government decisions around, for example, you know, allowing more intensification around the train stations in the inner west, whether that will help to shift the dial on some of that, because that is going to be something that indirectly, well, I think directly, but some people might see that as an indirect impact on decarbonisation. But hopefully we'll, you know, and some of the stuff it talked about, you know, we're losing that sense of people feeling like we're a safe, vibrant, I think the word they used was visceral, not quite sure what they mean by visceral, but, you know, the sort of dynamic, I guess, place to be, is that we know that those kinds of approaches to more intensification, transit-oriented developments around transport nodes like train stations does provide that vibrancy, that dynamism, that kind of stuff. So it'd be really interesting to see. I'm hopeful that those are some of the things that will shift the dials that we need, make Auckland a better place to live.
Yeah, just looking at the headlines this week, do you think it's a fair assertion to make that Auckland is falling behind in comparison with other cities?
I mean, one of the things, you know, on a national level that we're watching is that sort of there's a, you know, hollowing out of a lot of the public service, and there are actually a lot of public service jobs in Auckland. People moving overseas, you know, I mean, most of my husband's family live in Australia now. You know, a lot of people are experiencing that, people they know moving to Australia or moving out of Auckland because they can't afford housing here. So, you know, I think what the report identifies is real, and we've always had an issue where people have felt they needed to go overseas to get a level of experience that then allowed them to come back into New Zealand and do sort of the next tier jobs. But what we're seeing now is that we're losing people like teachers and nurses and people who didn't necessarily need that overseas experience to come back into more senior roles. They're going and they're not coming back because the pay is just not as good here. You know, they can't afford housing. Those kinds of things are driving people out. And unfortunately, we're seeing that accelerate again recently. And all of that has a knock-on effect on the city, I think.
One of the, like you're talking about, one of the key issues or metrics that was discussed a lot with relation to this report was Auckland's productivity, especially since we are the largest city in New Zealand and we do carry a lot of that I suppose, responsibility as a city. How do you think that the council should work as a whole to improve Auckland's productivity?
Yeah, so productivity is, to be honest, a really hard one from a council perspective because so much of it is tied up in settings that are controlled by central government and decisions that are made in private business. I mean, we have got the regional deal coming, which gives us a platform to have some of those conversations, and also the mayor's leading a bid for one of the sort of, I think they're called Centres of Innovation or Centres of Excellence, to be based in Auckland, which, you know, I think is a no-brainer for central government. So there is some stuff happening, but there's also been a dismantling of some of the previous stuff that was happening through the Callaghan Institute, for example. And some of the innovation that actually Auckland could be at the forefront of is actually in the environmental space too. And we are seeing a retrenching, a withdrawal from a lot of that kind of work. So, the Predator Free, the company that was overseeing Predator Free is being wound up by central government. Some of the signals that they're sending at the moment about reform in the local government space seem to be withdrawing from environmental regulation, which is part of what potentially drives some of the innovation in that space, is to go, okay, how do we deal better with these kinds of regulations and rules? How do we, you know, for example, they're looking at potentially really weakening the regulations around drinking water. I mean, drinking water, come on, guys, like that's the stuff of life that needs to be safe. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of innovation, for example, that Watercare's been doing around water treatment and how do we potentially recycle water, how do we get toxins out of water. And, you know, like I've been out to one of their plants, we're actually selling some of that technology to the world. But if we're going to go, okay, well, we don't need as much environmental regulation, then why would people be excited to do that work? Why would they see the necessity at the same time as we're moving away from blue skies research in our universities and research institutes as well, and defunding that kind of work, which again, you know, that blue sky stuff where you're just like, hey, we haven't got a commercial outcome in mind, but we've got a, you know, an innovative idea to pursue. Those kinds of things just aren't going to happen anymore because they're not getting funded through central government. And so again, you know, those kinds of innovations are the things that hopefully result in productivity increases. And so we're making these short-term changes that aren't going to help with our long-term productivity goal.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.